Hey, this is Brandon McManus, Denver Broncos Super Bowl champion, and you listen to The Scoop on AlScoop.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to The Scoop. It's season six. We have deemed it to be season six because I guess it just makes sense. Yep. We're getting sick of season five. A lot of episodes in season five. What have we gone up to? What, 47?
Almost at 50.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nearly got to the 50, but I think we had enough.
Yeah. Again, it's the end of August. We think a football season is upon us as far as we know, as far as Temple's concerned so far. I'm John DiCarlo, joined again by Sam Newman and Sam Cohn, Carolina Sam and Boston Sam, unless you guys want new nicknames. Do you want new nicknames, or are those starting to stick?
I kind of like them. I think they're starting to stick.
Yeah, all right. So that's good. That's good. So we appreciate you guys sticking around, returning to The Scoop. We do have a lot to talk about this week, primarily football. We got a couple of basketball-related mailbag questions as well. The mailbag picked up over the last few hours, so now we have a pretty decent stock of mailbag questions. It's been a couple weeks since we've talked to you. Hope everybody's safe, happy, and healthy during a year of 2020 that just gets crazier and more depressing. Hopefully we can be a little bit of a distraction for you today, whenever you're listening, whether it's Thursday night, Friday, over the weekend. As of now, Temple is slated to play an 8-game conference schedule for football. Their season opener would be September 26th at Navy. And then they would have 3 weeks off before what's currently scheduled to be their home opener on October 17th against South Florida, against USF. Schedule-wise, they currently have an even split of four home games and four road games. They're home against USF, SMU, ECU, and Cincinnati, with those last two home games closing out the regular season. But then they have Navy, Memphis, Tulane, and UCF all on the road, which wouldn't be easy. As of now, and again, no non-conference games to speak of. There's a mailbag question there. We'll get to that. We're starting to get football media availability. This week it was the offensive line, several offensive linemen, C.J. Perez, the Northern Illinois transfer, who really looks like he's going to be competing for that center spot, that starting center spot. Vince Picozzi at guard, who's back from his injury that cost him the rest of his season last season, last fall. Isaac Moore at left tackle, Adam Klein at right tackle. All spoke with reporters on Tuesday, along with Joe Tripodi, Temple's offensive line coach. You guys were part of those sessions, and we'll play some audio clips from Joe Tripodi, from Perez, from Klein, and Picozzi. We could play one. We could play one of Isaac Moore as well, if we can go back and look for one from him. But a real good look at the offensive line. Obviously, any coach getting into the season is going to say, I like my group, I like my depth, I like this, I like that. But you guys were on those sessions, or on most of those sessions. What did you think? I mean, Joe Tripodi seemed like a guy who, you know, although he's losing a really good center in Matt Hennessy to the NFL, and Jovan Fair, who's currently fighting for a roster spot with the Browns, likes what he has coming back. What were your general impressions from those sessions on Tuesday?
Yeah, what I took of it is they have a good group of guys, and I think the real key critical addition they have is C.J. Perez. I think they're really high on wisdom quotient, but I don't know if they're ready to insert him there in the middle and to have somebody who already can come in, you know, knows the offense. I mean, it's going to be hard for him to immediately gel without, you know, padded practices and that sort of stuff, but he knows the offense, knows the signals, that sort of stuff. So I think he's the perfect addition in the middle. And then you have a lot of experience outside of him with Adam Klein, Isaac Moore, and Vince Picozzi. So I think while Temple is, in turn, you're not having – the same players like Matt Hennessy, Jovan Fairback, they still have loads of experience. And if we talk about maybe inserting Michael Neese, who's the transfer from the University of Dayton at left guard, yeah, you have five starters with all starting experience right there. And that's pretty good. And I feel like they are happy with their depth. Like you said, John, I mean, all coaches tout their depth, but I think this is one of those years where Temple has significant depth in the offensive line. You have Joe Hooper, you have David Wagugu.
They seem to be pretty high on, I guess. From the outside looking in, I guess you're looking for, if you're bringing in Neese as a grad transfer, if Hooper's a senior, if Perez is a grad transfer from Northern Illinois who knows that system, then you bring along, you're hoping that they can play the majority of the snaps, and then guys like Wisdom Quarshie can be the next in line at center, and Aguru could be the next in line at, I guess, one of those guard positions.
Just to pile onto that, from Tuesday's media availability, it's cool to hear Joe Tripodi, Vince Picozzi are both really high on how good of an addition CJ Perez has been. And CJ Perez said kind of on a similar note that the guys have been welcoming him with open arms, and they really clicked. And it's been, I think it was Picozzi that said he brings in another level of competition to the room, and he brings a good knowledge base of the playbook, which has helped a lot in that offensive line room.
Let's go. I guess we'll kick off the audio with CJ Perez, and we've got some stuff here from Joe Tripodi, Adam Klein, and Vince Picozzi as well. But again, CJ Perez is a guy who was a junior college player. He's played his last two seasons at Northern Illinois, one of those seasons for Rod Carey, Mike Yuremovich, Joe Tripodi. So he knows these guys. So here's CJ talking to Sam Newman about, and essentially he's saying, like, I'm coming in and doing what I was expected to do, which is to lock down that starting center spot. So here's a little bit from CJ Perez, a guy who could potentially be Temple's new starting center.
You know, man, it's very exciting. I believe my connection with Coach Carey and his staff is very strong, and it's a connection I built with them really young as a collegiate athlete when I was actually at the junior college level. So when it came to playing college football after junior college, that was those were the first him and his staff were they were the first people that I really ever talked to. So that was really exciting for me when I was younger, and it's really cool the fact that I'm able to take what I've learned from them and a new staff after that, and bring it together when I'm sitting here now as a fifth year senior.
You know, now that you've got to play some snaps, do you have any really inclination of what your role is going to be like this season?
You know, I'm planning on doing what they brought me here to do. Plan on being the starting center for the Owls. Plan on playing my game, doing what I'm best at, being a leader, and just honestly, man, just having fun. You know, especially with what's going on right now in the world, man. Like, just football. Not even football, just sports in general, man, is something that's not only big for Temple and for Philly, just big for the world. So I think, you know, if we're able to go out there and just have fun, play the game that I love playing, that a lot of people love watching.
Yeah, just last question here. What is it like for you as an outsider coming in, looking at this offensive line, the continuity there? Do you feel like you fit in well in the middle there? And what do you think of the group as a whole?
No, yeah, the group is a bunch of great guys, man. I've really had a warm welcome from Vince Picozzi and Joe Hooper, Adam Klein, a lot of guys like that. Guys that really, you know, have played some valuable snaps. It's a valuable time and a very experienced, but also I think they understand, you know, my role, what I'm coming in here to do, and I think they've welcomed me with open arms, and they've been overall really good to me.
All right, so again, that's CJ Perez talking about coming in. And again, like we said earlier, just being the guy that the staff wants him to be. Again, if you can – he comes in and he's about, what, 6'1", 287, which isn't huge. But, you know, for a center, you can get away with a little bit of a smaller center as long as he knows those calls and as long as he's athletic enough, which he seems to be. So, again, check out Sam Cohn's story. We have a lot of coverage this week. Stories on Isaac Moore, stories on Vince Picozzi, CJ Perez, who Sam wrote about, and then Sam Newman's piece on the offensive line as a whole. So, again, we'll have more stories unfolding as the weeks go on here. Kind of an interesting preseason. Again, unless there is a non-conference game to speak of in September, it's going to be a longer preseason and more gradual preseason, if you can even call it that. Also, again, you guys had the chance to talk to Joe Tripodi, Temple's offensive line coach, again, with the rest of the staff. He's in his second season. Again, seems to be really happy with the group that he has. And again, just from year one to year two, it sounds very basic to say, but you guys are getting more up to speed. Seems like they're learning quicker, adapting quicker. In this clip that we're going to play here, Sam Newman has asked him about just if he, I think Sam, the one question you let off in that presser and that portion of media availability was, you know, whether or not he had a starting five in mind. And I think either in answering that question or later on in, or earlier in the interview, at some point in the interview, he talks about you want to grab your best five guys, even if they're, you know, four guards and a center or something like that. And then you asked him a little bit later here in this clip about Adam Klein and also what he's seen of the guys on the other side of the ball, like Ifan Maje. So here's Joe Tripodi talking about, again, his, you know, some of the guys that he likes and also what he's seeing on defense, because if you've been following our coverage and following coverage of the team, they were splitting things up into groups of 50 guys. They weren't working out more than 50 guys at a time. And they really, I think the last time we had talked to you guys on the podcast, they had not gone offense versus defense yet. It looks like they've started to do that now. And so a guy like Joe Tripodi and, of course, those offensive linemen are getting a better look at what they're seeing from their defensive counterparts. So here's Joe again talking about his group along the offensive line, talking to Sam in response to a couple of his questions here.
Do you guys have, like, right now, do you have in your head, like, what your projected starters are? Is it still kind of, like, moving pieces before the Navy game?
Yeah, Sam, I would say that it's still – there's a couple moving parts because, you know, we do have a couple of new guys. We have some returners and just kind of been just seeing where the pieces fall. You know, with the offensive line, your goal is to put out the best five players you can, all right? And in a perfect world to, you know, we believe as a staff to be a championship O-line, you need to have seven or eight guys that you can play. Now, going back to the front five, you know, coach always says it. I mean, it could be, you know, I know it's listed as two tackles, two guards and a center, but in a given year, you may have three guards, a tackle and a center that are your best five players. And then you have to put them in the spots to make up that line. So right now I'd say there's certainly a lot of competition.
Has anyone else moved around besides Adam Klein? And what have you seen from him playing between right tackle and center?
Well, the thing is football knowledge, football IQ. Whenever you – first of all, Adam, he works his butt off, and he is a smart football player. He's played a lot of football, but he's played a lot of football at right tackle. So then, you know, and those two practices we had in the spring, he was at center. He's certainly still repping in the center mix right now. When you learn the game of football, offensive line speaking, from the center, you know what everybody does. And I think now, you know, that's helped him at tackle for sure.
Yeah, just lastly here, you know, how have things gone now that it looks like you guys are going up against the defense a little bit, and what do you see from Maje and Ifan and Maje and some of the other guys on the other side of the ball?
Oh, man, explosive. You know, Ifan is a challenge to block. I'm glad he's on our side. Great young man, very well coached. Those guys just work hard, and the nice thing to see getting it when you get that competition, when you get a one-on-one situation with the O-line and D-line, what's been really cool to see is whether one guy wins or not, they're helping each other out. You know, they're talking with each other and they're communicating, and that's where you really get some growth at that position. But those guys up front on the defensive side of the ball are a challenge, and they definitely make us better.
All right, so again, you can check out the story that Sam wrote earlier in the week on the site. Again, it's available to our subscribers. A lot of good stuff from Sam Newman, a really good comprehensive look at the offensive line. We mentioned Adam Klein, of course, a guy who has really come in and played from day one, along with Isaac Moore. I mean, I guess if you're a coach or a coaching staff, you'd really want to hope that you could bring in some bookend offensive tackles, and Isaac Moore has been playing from day one at left tackle. Adam Klein has really been playing from day one at right tackle. There has been a little bit of talk here. Armand, who from our staff, had asked Adam to start off, maybe not to start off that media session, but it asked him about playing some snaps at center. And you're going to hear him talking here a little bit about that, seeing some time at center. But if we're going to take an educated guess here, it looks like I'd be surprised if he's not starting at right tackle, but he's had some versatility. He did see some snaps at center in spring ball, in the very abbreviated portion of spring ball that they had. In this first clip, you're going to hear here Armand talk to him about transitioning from right tackle to center, or even just maybe seeing some snaps here. So here's where Adam talks about taking snaps at both positions.
I mean, so far, I think it's been pretty smooth. I've been playing both center and right tackle, and then wherever coach needs me to play. It's been pretty smooth so far. I mean, I got a couple reps here and there, and then when we were able to have a couple practices of spring ball, so that was pretty helpful. And then obviously we had Matt Hennessy last year, so I got to learn a lot from him, just watching him play and watching him watch his work ethic and how he worked and how he learned the plays and how he really led the offensive group. So that was really helpful to have. But so far it's been pretty good, and I'm having a good time.
And just to follow up on that question on the offensive line as a whole, in terms of being a leader, you know, you've been here for 2 years now. So, like, just talk about what you're going to bring leadership qualities and what your expectations are for this group.
I think obviously with, you know, losing veteran guys like Jovan Fair and Matt Hennessy, I think I've taken it upon myself. I've had conversations with Vince and our coach that I need to be more of a leader this year and be more vocal. So that's something I need to bring to the table. I'm going to be more of a vocal leader. I'm trying to set the example and, you know, lead our group, just, you know, lead the young guys along like I was when I was a freshman. I think that's something I need to do. I think overall I just need to be a more vocal leader as I move on in my years at Temple.
All right, so then later on in that same media session with Sam Newman, again from our staff, asked Adam about just the evolution of the offense and how it looks in year two.
I think everything's moving a lot quicker. As in, like, you know, everything's a lot, like, the transitions are quicker with our offense. There's not as many mistakes as there was in the beginning. Everyone's got the offense kind of down pat. As the younger guys come in, they're doing a good job of staying on top of things and learning. But I think we have a little more of a veteran group now. Our second year in the offense. And you can tell in our walkthroughs, we've only got a little bit of stuff against defense, but as you can tell in our walkthroughs, we're doing a really good job of, you know, our motions, and our skill guys are doing a really good job. The offensive line hasn't really made much mistakes. So I think, as you know, in the second year, we feel a lot more comfortable. The coaches feel a lot more comfortable, and we're able to open the playbook up more, and, you know, and everything's running pretty well.
So again, I don't think it's much of a stretch, guys, to say that, I mean, I would be surprised if, barring some sort of injury, I'd be surprised if CJ Perez is not the starting center at Navy, right?
Yeah, it sure looks like that. I mean, you want to have depth at center for sure. Sure. I mean, you can insert Picozzi there, who saw time when Hennessy was out in 2018, and Wisdom Corshi and Klein, of course. But Perez is their guy, and I mean, as a grad transfer, that's what they're bringing him in to do. So, like you said, be surprised.
Then also, you mentioned Vince Picozzi. It was a big loss for them at guard with his season-ending knee injury. I guess it happened in the USF game, right?
Yeah.
And so he's, you know, he talked this week about, you know, a lot about what it's like to be back, that group as a whole. He really kind of becomes the returning veteran leader in that group. Obviously, CJ Perez has a lot of experience, but he's new in the sense that he's transferring in from Northern Illinois. So Sam talked to Picozzi about CJ Perez, asked him about what he's brought to the line, and you'll hear Picozzi talking about how Perez has created more competition there at center. So again, I think some of the guys had talked about Klein seeing some snaps at center, but here's Sam asking CJ Perez about, you know, asking Picozzi about CJ Perez and what he's brought to that group.
Hey, Vince, obviously, you know, you guys losing Matt Hennessy, Jovan Fair in the middle, that's tough. And, you know, without spring ball to get that kind of continuity, how important is it to have a guy like CJ Perez in there who already knows the offense, you know, knows the signals, knows all that sort of stuff just in the middle, especially with that lack of spring ball?
Yeah, I mean, so losing Matt and Jovan, obviously a big loss. Matt going, getting drafted, Jovan getting picked up. So huge losses there. But then we have just guys stepping right back up, guys that have been working 3-4 years. So having CJ come in, I think it's helping because it's created more competition in the room, especially with him knowing his playbook. It helps a lot that he's played this playbook before. The nice part is he has started at center at NIU under this playbook, so he knows a lot of the calls and what to do with blitzes. And we were kind of getting the hang of that through last season, our first season with these, with Coach Carey and Coach Capote. But CJ's been really been able to help the room with evaluating, seeing what we can do to blitzes in the schemes that we have put in.
Yeah, I just want to ask, you know, how is it for you guys coming into this next season already, having a year under that offense, just the next year of the offense? How does it feel coming into this year second year?
It feels really good. Just being able to add another year under the belt, playing in this offense, understanding it more, being able to work more in depth of learning defenses, how they'll fit to our schemes, learning exactly what's going on in the backfield, so that helps us as where the linebackers will flow, where the safeties will fit. So that's really been helpful, having that extra year already playing this offense. So I think this year is going to help us out a lot.
And then so later on in that media session, again, Alex McGinley asked Picozzi about Isaac Moore at left tackle. And you'll hear Vince Picozzi here tell a story about his first memories of seeing Moore on tape from when he was recruited and talking about how he could see some stuff in him right away. So, again, here's Vince Picozzi talking about his left tackle and Isaac Moore.
Oh, Isaac. Isaac has become one of my best friends. I still remember the day that our old coach, Coach Weezahan, came in the O-line room and showed us his workout videos. And I knew from then, like, I was like, he's an athletic, he's a big guy. So, like, he's going to help benefit this room. And, I mean, ever since he's gotten here, he's done nothing but keep getting better. And I have to give Isaac credit because he nonstop is always in his playbook, his footwork, and always just trying to get the next little advantage, next little step on the field.
All right, so, again, with this offensive line, again, you lose – one of the better centers that this program has ever had in Matt Hennessy. And again, it looks like he's got a nice career ahead of him with the Atlanta Falcons as a third round pick of the Falcons. But there is, you know, there is some talent there. Again, you've got an experienced grad transfer center in CJ Perez. Vince Picozzi's back. We'll see how things play out at the guard spot. Again, if it's Michael Mees from Dayton, the Dayton transfer starting, then you've got some competition there with Hooper and Ngugwu. But you also have, again, these bookend tackles that we've talked about who get the benefit of just, you know, having the same offensive coordinator, the same head coach, and the same position coach. You could say that about a lot of guys on the roster who are getting that benefit, whether it's them or Anthony Russo or guys like that. But how do you guys feel about this group? I mean, you think that they don't miss much of a beat this time around, even if it's in an 8-game season?
Well, I feel like it's hard. We always talk about how you hear when offensive line play that they're really only going to be as good as each other, and they're going to have some semblance of play. Obviously, you know, not having spring ball is tough, but I think with having, you know, these padded practices and still being able to have some semblance of a training camp that they'll be able to get together and play pretty well. But I think the experience, the overwhelming experience in the group is going to lead them to success this year. And just another year under that offensive line, scheme elements under Yaremovich, of course, what he wants to run, but also Joe Tripodi. So I think having year two under their belt should, you know, lead to some success in 2020.
The other piece of optimism I would add is, and this is something that the handful of people talked about on Tuesday, is that having this non-padded and non-offense against defense, you know, they just got started in offense against defense in practice, but having a chance to just get back to fundamentals and get back to basics and relearn schematic stuff and, you know, reteach and refigure things out. So having kind of an extra workout period to really relearn things and really kind of come together as an offensive line, I think should be helpful.
And really, this is about what Rod Carey or Mike Yaremovich or Joe Tripodi or most coaches would hope for, is that you don't have to throw some of your younger guys into the fire right away. Now, you know, that happened with Isaac Moore and Adam Klein, and you could always look at the flip side of it and say those guys are better off for it, and they have been, but you can bring along a guy a little bit more slowly, more deliberately, like a redshirt freshman and Jermaine Donaldson. And last I heard, they were pretty high on him. He's a local kid from Eastern High School from South Jersey. Some of your true freshmen like Bryce Toman and Sam Davis, you can bring along. And again, they have high hopes for those guys, but they don't have to play right away unless you have a spate of injuries. You have Miles Zitek coming in from Germany, who had been waiting to come over during the pandemic. Victor Stoffel, they can afford to bring along a little bit more. And we mentioned Wisdom Quarshie, who they really like out of St. Joe Hamilton, who, you know, he seems big enough and athletic enough to step in at center. But again, if you give him another year to develop, again, this is kind of the depth that you want to build out. I think Rod Carey has talked – I know he's talked to me in the past about wanting as many as like 15 or 16 scholarship guys on the offensive line to keep building out that depth. So I think this is about where they could, you know, hope to be at this point with the offensive line. So again, we'll do more in-depth stuff on all the other positions, the defense, the offense, the receiver group. I'm sure we'll get plenty of questions about the quarterback, special teams, all that stuff. And again, as it's drawn out, we'll have a little bit more time to do it leading up to that opener at Navy. Again, unless things change and they squeeze in a non-conference game, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Last time we talked to you, the single-digit picture had not come into focus as much. I think we've been pretty spot on with some of our predictions. I think on our last podcast, we hadn't talked about – we mentioned some of these names. Numbers 4 and 9 are still open. As of now, Brandon Mack is number 1. Christian Braswell ended up grabbing number 2. We talked about him the last time around. Amir Tyler, we talked about him the last time around. He has number 3. That, of course, is a cool thing for him, inheriting his former Lakewood High School teammates, number 3, and Chappelle Russell. Those guys both came out of Lakewood High School, and we've talked about this in previous podcasts. You know, Chappelle was a guy that always played right away. Amir Tyler had some decent looks coming out of college, but he's been pretty honest, as we've mentioned before, about, you know, maturing both on and off the field. He played a lot more snaps last year with Benny Walls hurt. And, you know, again, keep in mind that players vote on these single digits, and the team leadership council and the current single digit guys have a voice as well. But it goes to show you how far Amir Tyler has come around. So it sounds like he's brought the leadership, the maturity piece of it in with the talent and blended that as well. And number 5 ended up going to Jaden Blue. Not much of a surprise there. It certainly is produced on the field. The program's first 1,000-yard receiver. Seems to be a pretty solid guy off the field as well. Dan Archibong, Randall Jones, and Isaiah Graham Mobley are coming back and returning with their numbers at 6, 7, and 8 respectively. So again, it's 4 and 9 still up for grabs. I'm told that number 0 could still be a possibility. So any educated guesses on who gets those numbers 4 and 9?
I think 9, you're probably looking at Ifan Maje or maybe somebody like Manny Walker, who's already working with the ones as a grad transfer. I still think that most of your numbers, you're looking at defense. And obviously, you know, they can repeat the numbers well because all O-linemen can get them. And obviously, they can't wear them, but I think they wear, you know, a sticker on their helmet or something like that. But between 4 and 9, I feel like you look at guys, like I said, Manny Walker, Ifan Maje, Will Quinku, and potentially Linwood Crump. Those are my best educated guesses right there.
Yeah, I think those are probably – if it was anybody other than those guys, I'd be a little surprised. But you don't know. Manny Walker's an interesting name, Sam, because, again, you've reported that he's – running with the ones, and you know, if that's where he is, then it means you got yourself what they hope will be a good and productive grad transfer who's really trying to spell and compensate for the loss of Quincy Roche down at Miami. We'll talk a little bit of basketball recruiting in the mailbag here in terms of the current basketball program. They're finally, now that they have the team back on campus, they've been able to work out. Not that the official NCAA practices have started, but they've been putting some stuff on social media about the guys working out over at the facility. So we'll be talking about some basketball in the coming weeks as well. And of course, we'll answer any mailbag questions you guys have there. We'll get to the mailbag now. Again, it filled up a little bit closer to the start of recording here, but we got some good stuff here. We'll start with West Coast Al from our message board. How do you all think the season will play out in terms of games played? So I guess he's asking if he thinks they'll get in a full 8 games. What do you guys think?
I think the fair over-under is probably 4.5, or around 4. I think they get close to halfway. I don't think they make it to the full season. I think that it's hard to say that, like, if there is any kind of outbreak, it's hard to think that they would not shut down the season. And I, with all the traveling they're doing, I mean, they are taking extreme protocols to ensure their safety. And Fran Dunphy did say that there is a chance they could bump up from 1 test to 2 tests a week once season gets started, and they are being careful. But it's just so hard to tell the future right now. But I would say they get my gut and my guess would be around 4 or 5 games they get through, and then maybe it gets shut down.
Carolina Sam, New York Mets Sam, what do you think?
I mean, I think that they're going to be able to get in all the games. It's just my personal opinion. The way that their schedule is kind of split up right now to where you have spaces in between, I think that's going to help them. And if they don't schedule non-conference games, I think, you know, even having 3 weeks off isn't ideal. It might help them in the long run in terms of, you know, if there is an outbreak, being able to quarantine and that sort of stuff. So let me do an over-under here. I think your over-under might be like at 5-6, just going a bit above Celtic Sam, Boston Sam over here. I don't know. I feel a little bit more optimistic just as where things are trending.
I do too. And again, this will be a theme at least over the next few weeks. I'm not sure I see the benefit of scheduling a non-conference game right now, unless it was some high profile matchup, which really doesn't look likely at this point. We're kind of heading into a mailbag question we have here coming up. If your first game is truly September 26th at Navy, it's a bus trip. You don't have to get on a plane. And let's say for argument's sake that a couple of your players do test positive for the coronavirus between then, you give yourself some time to quarantine them and then get them back into the mix, provided they can bounce back, you know, healthy. You give yourself a lot of time. It seems like Rod Carey's approach, and he said this, has been slow and steady, building up. What's the city going to allow us to do? What are we going to be permitted to do? But I don't know that there's a benefit in playing another non-conference game or playing a non-conference game in general, and that could really allow you to sort this piece of it out where you get more of your protocols in place and you can continue to practice and get work in. So, I mean, the tricky thing will be, hate to pick on the state of Florida again, but I mean, if you're playing November 14th at UCF in Orlando, considering the problems that Florida has had, sure, we could see something where there's a spike and Temple says it's not safe for us to fly down to Florida. I think that's the one thing I would look at there that might knock a game off of their schedule, but we'll see. And of course, USF is scheduled to come up here to Philadelphia on October 17th. So, but obviously that's where you let both administrations talk about their testing protocols and what they're going to get into place there. But as I'm sitting here now on August 27th, as we're recording this, I'm with you, Sam Newman. I'm a little bit more optimistic than pessimistic. Hell with that. I'll just say they get all 8 games in. I'll try to be optimistic. We'll see, but don't hold me to that. But I don't know. I think they have a shot at getting all 8 in.
Yeah, John, I agree with you. I think obviously, but I think they're going to get all the conference slate games in. The thing I'm pessimistic about is them scheduling non-conference games. I just don't see that happening right now. Because Pitt was an option, but I think they scheduled a game with another, yeah, I'm not mistaken, and Boston College is one that's up in the air. But in all honesty, I don't really know how that's going to work. And I mean, they play them next season, so you could obviously bump it up. But who really knows at this point?
Yeah, and that goes to one of the mailbag questions we got on Twitter from Detroit Al. His first question was, will there be football before Navy? And I think we just started to talk about that now. I think it's doubtful. And his other question was, is there any update on the AD search, on the athletic director search? So, of course, Fran Dunphy has been the acting interim athletic director. I can't remember if I mentioned this on our last podcast or if I just mentioned it to you guys. Talk to one source about this. And if, you know, sometimes the prevailing school of thought seems to be that, you know, with Richard Englert, Temple's current president, announcing his retirement and that he'll serve, I believe, through this next upcoming fiscal year. You know, I think initially some people thought, well, that could mean that Fran Dunphy's the athletic director for the next year and that the new president will hire the new athletic director. I've talked to a couple of people nationally who think that may not be the case, that they could make a move on it sooner than people think. I don't think anything is imminent. But we'll have to see how that plays out. Again, those are decisions that are obviously made well above our pay grades, as cliche as that sounds. But I don't think there's any concrete update on the search. I don't know, even know if Temple has really commenced a search at this point. I think when you're Temple's leadership, I think your priority right now is just getting the campus opened as safely as possible and in as organized a fashion as possible. But could we see a new athletic director before Richard Englert retires? Possibly. That's what I've been told, but we'll have to see how it plays out. Good question, but a lot to be determined there. Next mailbag question from the message board is from Green Street Al. Philadelphia loves itself a QB controversy. Based on what you've heard, do you think that this year we'll see more of a change of pace approach like last year, or stick to one guy who wins the job and that's it? Regardless, is it the opinion of the Al Scoop staff or based on what you've heard that Rial Mitchell is a better player and or athlete than Todd Senteo? Terrific question. And I imagine it's on a lot of people's minds. Again, we don't get to see any of practice. I don't want to give Rial Mitchell too much of the benefit of the doubt. We've obviously seen Todd Senteo a lot live. I have not seen Rial Mitchell live. I will go ahead and say that I think Mitchell is a better athlete than Senteo. I think sometimes people will say, Todd, he can run it. He's definitely a good athlete. I think he was decently fast, but I don't think he was super quick. But Toddy had a decent arm on him too. But I think that Mitchell might be a better athlete. I think he's more explosive than Centeno, but I want to hear what you guys think about this as well.
Yeah, I think the notion there, I think Mitchell's a better athlete, probably more explosive. And at Iowa State, he would come on kind of like as a change of pace guy, and he had left fans clamoring for more. But obviously when you have a guy like Brock Purdy there, it's a different situation than somebody like Anthony Russo. So I think those packages definitely can be in consideration, but when you look back into it and see like it really didn't, and again, like we're putting it with Real Mitchell, it's probably a better athlete, better, more explosive than Todson Tail, but when Temple put in those type of packages, they became predictable in their offense. So it remains to be seen whether you know they'll do like a two quarterback or a one and a half quarterback offense, but I think it's safe saying that Real Mitchell has a chance of being a better quarterback here for sure.
Yeah, I don't feel like I can. I feel like I can't really add much more than that, just because we haven't really seen him play live or seen so much of him play. But as Sam was kind of getting to, I think you're going to look at a similar use for Real Mitchell in this offense this year behind Anthony Russo.
Next question along those lines from what TU is the screen name from the message board. To piggyback off Green Street's question a little bit, what kind of leash does Anthony Russo have this year with Mitchell expected to be talented behind him? With the potential shortened season, do you think it's shorter, longer, doesn't change? Again, a good question. I think it's an interesting one to ponder. And I like Anthony a lot. I mean, sometimes people forget that, you know, a couple years ago, I mean, he came in, we know the lineage of Anthony Russo. He was a fairly highly recruited quarterback at Archbishop Wood. You know, he was in that Elite 11 showcase, and a lot of fans said, okay, great. He's the quarterback of the future. LSU was recruiting him. Les Miles had recruited him. I don't know if they ever officially offered. I think they wanted him to visit. He had flipped from Rutgers to Temple. He came in and he didn't play right away, which is very normal. But then there were rumors that he might look to transfer if he didn't eventually get the starting job. Well, eventually he did win the starting job. And he has grown a lot. And again, we've talked about it a million times. We see the arm talent there. We also see some of the costly interceptions. He's talked about how he's come in better shape. I think he's dropped some weight. He wants to be a little bit leaner, wants to be a little bit more mobile. And I think he's come a long way. And as Rod Carey said last week, he said, look, someone's got to come in and knock him out. You know, he's our guy. Someone's got to come and beat him out. But there's not that notion yet that, like, you know, again, it can always change in football. There's not that notion of, like, he is the guy. He is the unquestioned leader. Now, again, he could end up playing all 8 games this season and being the starter. I don't think that would surprise anybody. But there does seem to be this growing notion that Mitchell and Trad Betty, even Trad Betty, could really push him. So he might have a little bit of a shorter leash this year. Now, I think that there might be things that Real Mitchell – obviously, there will be things that Mitchell has to prove. He's a bit of a shorter guy, so maybe throwing over the middle of the field and over the line might be a little bit more of a challenge for him. We'll see. But – I think that leash for Anthony Russo might be a little shorter. And again, it's so interesting because he of course was one of the players that said, yeah, he would definitely be interested in coming back. The NCAA has said that it would grant an extra year of eligibility to players, even if they did decide to play this year. So the quarterback position, just like any other, is going to be really interesting, but I think that leash is a little shorter this year. I think they like the development that they've seen with Trad Betty, and I think they like what they've seen of Real Mitchell so far.
I agree with you, John. I think it's a little shorter, but I think we also have to take into account that this is also his second year in an offense.
Yes, very good point.
While he learned Jeff Collins and Dave Pattenau's offense, he wasn't playing in it to begin with his first year. So this is kind of his second season in an offense naturally, to where he's learning it, probably has, you know, better feel of it. But also I feel like it all kind of boils down to, has his decision-making improved? That's been the thing since when he came onto the scene in 2018, is the decision-making. And last year, I mean, he obviously, you know, that ratio improved, but obviously there were still points of throws that make you put your hands in your face and like, what is he doing? But I think at the end of the day, the leash is just a bit shorter just because of the development in the quarterback room. And like we just said, I think we all can agree that Real Mitchell probably has a higher – projection as a quarterback than Todd Zendejo, and then now you have Trad Betty, who's coming along well, and Rod Carey talked him up. So I think the leash is a bit shorter, but I think you also have to take into account different aspects of Anthony Russo's game at the same time.
So the next question from the message board comes from SoCal Al. With tighter budgets, any talk of dropping sports at Temple? What's the status of the TU women's coach? I'm assuming this is basketball because it came from our basketball board. Why is a poor performance business as usual? To tackle the first part, I have not heard of any talk of any sports being dropped at Temple. I know that that has been an unfortunate part of the economic impact of the pandemic. I don't know what's ahead. I have not heard anything about sports being dropped at Temple. Temple's women's basketball coach, Tanya Cardoza, why is such a poor performance business as usual? I mean, they extended back in 2017, November of 2017, Temple extended Tanya Cardoza. She is technically the all-time winningest coach in Temple's women's basketball history. Of course, they had a great coach in Dawn Staley, who eventually went on to South Carolina, has been a North Philly legend, obviously an American basketball legend who carried the Olympic colors into the, you know, onto the track there, into the opening ceremonies, which was huge. And we know how fantastic she's been, but Tanya has the most wins of any coach, but yeah, they haven't had a lot of tournament success. We know how hard it is to win an elite level in college basketball. You have the clear haves and have nots, but I don't know. I mean, I don't see anything really happening before the end of her contract, but I'm not super close to that situation. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on this, but you know, I don't know that there's anything imminent there. I don't think there's anything imminent heading into this season. I'd be mildly surprised if she didn't have the opportunity to coach out her contract, but you know, I could be wrong.
I think that it all boils down to that's probably a decision for the next athletic director.
Yeah.
To determine whether or not that she deserves to stay. But I, like you said, I don't think we're close enough to make a determination one way or another.
Right. Next question here comes from at Matt Deebs on Twitter. What happened to Kyle Dobbins? He hasn't been mentioned much and was left out of the running back committee recently. I guess it was either Rod Carey or Yuremovich talking about the running backs recently. I think the short answer there, just from what I've been told by a couple of sources, is he just really hasn't emerged as a guy. Like, he just hasn't. He had a good high school career. He was at St. Augustine Prep, and then he was at Timber Creek High School. Again, I know he was he wasn't like a 4 or 5-star recruit who was, you know, fending off interest from Alabama and LSU, but he did have a decent recruiting profile. But it seems like other guys have kind of lapped him at this point, whether it's Tavon Rooley, a guy who recently earned a scholarship as a walk-on, or maybe Onassis Neely gets a look, and I think they really like Edward Sadie too.
Yeah, Mike Yuremovich basically said that, you know, you have three guys who stood out, and Dobbins is there, but it sounds like, you know, from him without really revealing his hand, that Dobbins has just not stuck out. And you have Neely returning from injury, and it seems like they have three guys that they're comfortable with, and maybe you could Ray Davis is probably your bell cow back, and you'll have Tavon Rooley and Edward Sadie probably sharing carries as, you know, your two and three backs. So I just think it's a matter of people have just been outplaying him. And I don't think it has anything to do with the kid personally. I just think that other players are stepping up.
Yeah, it's becoming a crowded room, and I feel like we've heard only good things about those first four. So that could just be what it comes down to.
And in terms of, like, you know, just the size and speed of these guys, I mean, Ray Davis is a little bit smaller, but as Sam said, he is your bell cow back. You saw what he could do. You saw what he could do last season. Ed Sadie is a bit of a like a smaller, faster guy, I guess you could say. Onassis Neely, if he does get into the mix, he's 6 feet 2'10". Rooley 6 feet 215. I know they like a lot of what they've seen of Rooley, enough to scholarship him again. So we'll see what happens there. Sadie's 5'11", 200 pounds, but again was a really fast guy coming out of Penn Charter, but does seem that Dobbins is down the depth chart a little bit. Again, things can change very quickly in football, but yeah, it just doesn't, you know, that I think that's an accurate assessment there from Matt Deebs on Twitter. He hasn't been mentioned much, has been kind of left out of the committee talk there. I think that's a fair assessment, but just hasn't really turned the corner as of yet. Next question comes from Temple fan Al. Any news on when the Nike jerseys will be revealed? Who knows? I don't know yet. I don't know if they will do any sort of jersey reveal. I know you know, obviously Jeff Collins used to like to do a lot with all the uniform combinations when they were with Under Armour. I think it's possible that they could do some sort of reveal heading up to the Navy game, but we'll see. Next question. This is a basketball-related question from the message board. Basketball message board from Al Worldwide. Do you think Temple has a legit shot at Jameel Brown in 2022? I saw he just posted a what if about Temple earlier yesterday. So, Sam, I'll tip it over here to Sam Cohen in a second because he did a story about Jameel Brown. I think the initial reaction from the outside looking in might be like, yeah, they could recruit him, but I don't know how much of a shot they've had because, again, Temple just went through this process. They threw a lot of resources and time and energy into recruiting a guy like Stevie Mitchell. It looked like all the planets had aligned. They didn't get him. Of course, they aren't very happy with Isir Miller, it seems, enough to offer him and keep a very good, talented player home in the city, a guy from Newman Gretti. But when you look at Jameel Brown, rankings-wise, he's a four-star guy. Rivals currently has him rated at number 82 in the 2022 class. Has offers from Temple, Ohio State, Purdue. Plays at the Haverford School just outside of Philly. But as I understand, he lives in North Philly, not far from Temple. He's a combo guard with a really good feel for the game. Heading into it, if you get, you know, if you have Miller in the fold, if you eventually get a guy like Zach Hicks, you could roll your third scholarship over, or you could go three scholarships in 21 and then just save one for 2022. And you could really go all in on Jameel Brown and say, we have one scholarship. It's there for you. You know, you would be the next guy in line who we would want to be that Philly guy to stay home. I've heard from a couple of different sources. I have not talked to the man directly. I've heard that his father would like for him to stay home. Again, that can change. We all know how everything can change in recruiting, but I think they've got a shot. Do I think they have a legit shot? Sure. Right now, it seems like they do. Will it be easy? No. We've talked so many times about until you see it, you have to see it to believe it. And Temple's not landed a top 100 player in, I don't know, a long time. So we'll see. Sam, what are your thoughts on this? You've talked to him. You did a story on him earlier in the summer. What do you think about this?
I was actually not the one that did a story on him. Armin did a story on him.
Oh, that's right. Poor Armin. I'm denying him credit of his byline there. I feel like we've talked about him a lot, but my apologies to Armin. He did the story on Jameel, which you can read on our site.
It definitely carries weight that he's from the Philadelphia area. He went to Haverford High School. He's been
at the Haverford School. Haverford High School, which is down the street from me in Havertown. And then the Haverford School was not far out on the main line in Haverford Township.
Shows how much I know. He went to the Haverford
from Boston. School.
He went to the Haverford School. I think it definitely carries weight. Definitely means something. He's from the area. He's been to the Leah Corps Center. He's gone to see games at the Leah Corps Center. I think he has a good relationship with Temple's coaching staff. But I mean, to be fair, he's got offers from Nebraska, Ohio State, Purdue, Temple, and Notre Dame and Villanova have talked to him, had been recruiting him in the past. I don't kind of really know where he stands with that, but I think they have a chance. But as you kind of mentioned, how legitimate of a shot as of right now, we really don't. We can't really say definitively.
Yeah, he's got some USA basketball experience. Mm-hmm. Plays for Team Final on the EYBL circuit. We'll see how that plays out when AAU ball eventually gets back up and running. He's seen Temple's campus. He's taken an unofficial visit. But, you know, when Armand talked to him, we have this quote here. He says, it was my first unofficial, so I really wasn't sure what to expect. But when I got there, everyone showed me a good time. So we'll see. But from what I can tell from talking to a few sources about this, I do think Temple will go after him pretty aggressively and not back down and say, all right, he's a top 100 kid. We don't want to go through this whole process again where we invest all of our time and energy in a local kid. You know, you're not revamping the roster like you did with this most recent class with a couple of transfers and a couple of freshmen. So as of now, I do think they have a shot. Again, with recruiting, I would never say he's a lock to go there or anything like that, but I think they might have a better chance than people think. It's a great question, but we'll obviously have to see how it plays out. Next question comes from Delaware Al from the message board. Who coaches the big men? Do former players like Mark Jackson counsel current team members? So Mark Jackson can stop by practice and watch it, but Mark Jackson can't get out on the court and actively work with these guys. Would they benefit from that? Yeah. I mean, Mark Jackson was a terrific big man for Temple. I covered his career when I was in college, and he was great. One of the best big men they've ever had. As I understand it, I think it's a collaborative effort on the staff. I don't think there's one guy who's always like solely dedicated to just working with the big men. Of course, again, any of these players could maybe pick Mark's brain off the court and say, how did you, you know, how did you take your game from this place to that place? And I remember Mark telling me that he got better by doing a couple things. He watched a ton of tape on Karl Malone. Again, this is back in the 90s. And Mark used to play a lot of full court basketball, full court one-on-one to get himself in shape. When he worked out with a guy like John Hardenette, the late, great John Hardenette, who was a mentor to a lot of people in the Philly basketball community, worked out a lot of pro guys as well. And Mark was so singularly focused on, you know, again, if you've heard a lot about his story, I mean, he grew up really struggling financially and he left school a year early to try to go pro and did go pro because he wanted to take care of his mother. So he'd obviously be a great mentor to Temple's players. And again, he stopped by and watched practice, and I know he'll stop in and talk to Aaron, but he can't actively go out there and coach. I think that would be an NCAA violation, but I'm sure they might pick his brain. But as I understand it, there's not one single guy on the staff that just works with the big men. I'm sure each of them will spend time with them, but they don't have, it's not so much like they have a dedicated big man coach like they used to in like years past. They've got like Jay Norman. Next question comes from, and this is the last one, we can do one last sweep here to see if we have any others. Our friend Pat Egan from 97.5, the Fanatic, a producer at the Fanatic. He's been doing a lot of work on their morning show recently. Chimes in with this question. It's a two-parter, so it's back to Pat's thing that he does where he has a serious question and then a goofy question. How do you all expect schools to handle senior day if they only get a half a season or even a quarter of a season? Could they get an extra year? Well, yes, the NCAA did say that they would grant athletes the opportunity to get an extra year after this year. So how they sort out the scholarships and all those numbers will be something that'll certainly be interesting. And you wake up in a theater and the two old guys from the Muppets are relentlessly razzing you, and not the kids stuff. They're really hurting your feelings, really going in on you to the point where you can't believe they know this much info on you. Who, either from the basketball or football or scoop staff, would you call to give it back to them to save your dignity? So Statler, Waldorf for the old guys from the Muppets. I don't know if that's like before your time, guys, but you know, the guys that sit up in the upper level watching stuff and chime in on stuff. So just imagine that these guys are really just hazing you and giving it to you. Who from the basketball or football staff or the Al Scoop staff would you call to give it back to them? I think I know my answer on this side, but I want to hear what you guys think.
It's who would we call on the Al Scoop staff to give it
to give it back to them to stand up for you?
Kyle.
Yes.
Yeah, it's easily Kyle.
He's easily Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, I think – I don't know if Pat just wanted to tip his cap to Kyle. Kyle, again, is still part of the Al Scoop staff, hasn't been able to join us on the podcast for a while. He is father to one of the most adorable little kids I've ever seen. His son Jordan is a super cute kid, but yeah, I mean, I love Kyle to pieces. He's one of my best friends, but I mean, he knows. You guys have seen, like, I've made the mistake of showing him a couple of like my embarrassing childhood photos, not even childhood photos, like junior high photos. And the one time I think we were on a road trip somewhere and I was driving and I put my phone down. And he grabbed my phone, texted the picture to himself. And I was like, what are you doing? He's like, what? I didn't do anything. And then he has a folder now of embarrassing pictures of John. So you guys have seen some of them. And
we should definitely mention that he paid legitimate money to get a cardboard cutout of you at the Phillies.
Yes. Kyle and Graham were behind that, which cracked me up. Another group chat that I'm in, I was in our WHIP meeting. So again, some of you might know that in a full-time capacity at Temple, I'm the managing director of student media there. And so I'm the advisor to the Temple News, WHIP, and to Templar, our yearbook. Both you guys have worked at WHIP as well. Sam Cohen is our podcast director there. So we're sitting in our WHIP meeting the other night, and I just see a screen grab of a cardboard cutout of my face at Citizens Bank Park. And another group chat that I'm in, I'm like, is this real? And then one of our buddies who also knows Kyle just sent the link to his tweet, and I just started cracking up. And Kyle said he tried to get me behind home plate and was throwing around some significant money with Sam, with Graham, trying to get me behind home plate.
But so you'd pay Graham some serious cash if he get you behind home plate for the rest of the season.
I told him not to waste his money, but it did.
I think for him, it would have been worth it.
Lori said what he should have done was just get like a bunch of John DiCarlo faces. He said, could you imagine like a ball being hit out to left field and all of a sudden you see somebody backing up? Like, who plays left field? McCutcheon? Is McCutcheon in right? Bryce is in left. McCutcheon's in right. Should I know this?
I think it's the opposite. I think Bryce is in right and McCutcheon
is in right. That's right. So, you know, either way, I'm watching some baseball, Citizens Bank Park coming up. So let's do a quick double check here. I think we got to all the mailbag questions, right? I don't think there's anything left on Twitter. We did not have anything else on the message board here. So again, really appreciate you guys sticking with us. Really excited to get our sixth season of The Scoop started. Again, it's going to be a, we hope there will be a season. It's going to be a season unlike any other. We'll of course keep you posted on the site with our coverage. Again, if you're following us on social media, we'll have updates for you. There will be more media availability as this interesting preseason progresses. So we'll have more coaches to talk to, more players to talk to keep you in the loop. So stay tuned to The Scoop. Thanks to our wonderful cast of Sam Cohn and Sam Newman for being with me again this week. And we'll talk to you guys next week.